Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Hey. A member of the Golden Text Group in Dania Beach, Florida. And it's great to be here with you guys tonight. I just want to say something. This is a wild group. Okay? I don't know what's going on at this table right here, but it's you Latinos are really wild. Okay? Wow. I thought Shakira and was hot, but this is hot in here. You know, before I get into my talk, I want to say one thing. 19 years ago, I had just had 7 years of sobriety. And I was in an intergroup in Broward. And they did a sobriety countdown. And I was the guy that received the book. But what I want to say is, I wasn't serious. I was there. I had just had 7 years. I just started drinking. My wife thought it would be good if she, you know, took me there to see if it would take, because these were all my friends. Because the only people I knew in AA were people in Broward were in AA. So she brought me to the dinner, the intergroup dinner, in the middle of my drinking. And so, of course, I won because I was drinking. And so to see, I know that. And so to see tonight, a person that has a sincere desire to stop drinking. And then to see you receive the book. You know, and really the truth of the matter is, Andy, you are the most important person in this room. And we all are be praying for you, because as this fine gentleman said, this is an amazing way of life. Amen. And so I'm very grateful that guy that's going to talk with you now is not the guy that was still drinking during the intergroup dinner 19 years ago. My sobriety is January 3rd, 2002, and I've been in AA 27 years. I came in very young. I came in at 21 years old. A lot of noise going on. I'm just going to do the best I can. And I came in to AA by a way of a treatment center. I'm from Long Island, New York. Just in that, you see what some people cheered, because people from Long Island really feel like the entire planet and solar system centers around Long Island. And I certainly did. I certainly did think that everyone was either from New York or not from New York. I didn't think there was other states in between. And I come from a half Jewish, half Catholic background, which is very confusing, because and both sides were very both. So they were very Jewish and also very Italian. And when you're a kid, if you don't know the difference and you praise the Lord on the wrong day, you know, when the Jews are there, you know, you get the frown. You know, I'm like, praise Jesus. And my Jewish family, like, no, we don't do that on Friday night. So a lot of angst growing up. We call it agita in Italian. A lot of mixed feelings. I believe that I had alcoholism before I took my first drink. I believe that alcoholism has anything to do with drinking. It's what I did to treat what was going on. Alcohol treated my alcoholism. I felt restless, irritable, discontent, and unhappy with my life way before I took a first drink. And I'm going to give you examples tonight of that will prove that. And I knew that my problem was my family background. I knew my problem was that I didn't have brothers. And I'll explain that to you. In my neighborhood, everything is separated in blocks. And depending on who your brothers are is depending on the juice you get in the neighborhood. So most of the kids in my block, they had three brothers. The Mundingers had three brothers. The Wagamans had three brothers. The Woolies, three brothers. The Cohens, three brothers. Me, I had a short, chubby sister. So when you walk up to the playground with a short, chubby sister, you get no juice. Nobody picks you. Nobody's afraid of you. Nothing. And so early on, I knew that my problem was that I was from the wrong family. We're half Jewish. We're half Italian. We're confused over there. I got a short, chubby sister. Nobody understands me. I don't have brothers. Nobody can give me any juice on the playground. And I was already feeling less than. And then one day we got a new coach in the grade school, in middle school. And he was going through the roster. And he gets to my last name and he says, Boyarski. I said, yes, coach. He said, does your brother play for the Pittsburgh Panthers? That's a simple answer if your brother doesn't play for the Pittsburgh Panthers. But at that moment, I realized everything was going to change in my life at that exact moment. And before I knew it, I said, yes, he does, coach. And all my friends looked over like, what? We didn't even know you had a brother. I'm like, I do. He plays for the Pittsburgh Panthers. And I tell you that story because I wanted to be anybody other than me. I wanted to be anyone other than me. I was willing to be whatever it took to... I started each day as a less than. And it took me everything in outside powers to make me maybe an equal. I was always starting out as a less than. When I told you that my brother played for the Pittsburgh Panthers, I became at least a little comfortable in my own skin. Even though it was a lie, I felt like at that moment I could fit in. And so I developed a chameleon type of personality. You like sports. I love sports. You like politics? I'm in politics. You like this? I'm in that. And I lost who I was. I was so insecure as a kid about who I was that I really felt like nobody would want to play with me unless I had something to offer. And I never thought you would just want to hang out with me to be with me. Low self-esteem. And I'm 12 years old, and you'll see why I'm telling you the story. Because I had alcoholism before I took my first drink. This is before I took my first drink. And my mother had a very bad accident, and she was in the hospital, so she was away in upstate New York. She had a horseback riding accident in upstate New York. My dad was at a funeral for one of our family members, and I'm 12, and I'm in the house alone for the first time. I've been in the house alone other times when there's a babysitter watching or something like that. But never where people are out of town and I'm alone. And the one thing that I had that other kids didn't have in my neighborhood, because my dad was a war veteran and a war hero, a Korean War hero, is we had guns. And in my neighborhood, that was not everyone had guns. Nobody had guns. But my dad had guns. They had brothers. I had guns. So I said to the toughest kid in my neighborhood, Kevin, I said, would you like to come hang out with me? And he said, you know, something like, why? And I said, because I have guns and we can blow stuff up. And he said, yes. And he came over my house and we started to shoot at things. And in my own insecurities, I felt he was leaving. I felt he was waning interest in being with me. So I upped the ante. And I said, we can shoot at each other. And I gave him the gun. And I said, shoot at me. I'll move fast. I didn't move fast enough. And a 1 in a million shot came and blew my right eye out. I was so willing to be anything that you wanted as I was willing to have you shoot at me so that you wouldn't leave. By the time I took my first glass of Jewish table wine, which is called Manischewitz, which I still appreciate. When I took that glass of Jewish table wine, Manischewitz, and it went down my already damaged self-esteem system, and by the time it was in my gut, I was able to feel the ease and comfort that only alcohol can produce. Because there's only so much lying, there's only so much trying to keep people around you. If you have insecurities, people will leave. But when I had alcohol in my system, even though I didn't get drunk, when I had alcohol in my system, I had the feeling of it's going to be okay. And what I want to say to anyone that has that is, we're not just going to give that up because of some small consequences like DUIs or broken marriages or jail sentences. We're not just going to give that up. Something that works as good as it works in us with alcoholism, we're not just going to give it up because someone says, you know what, you have a real problem. And this is actually working for me. And so this worked for me for a little while. And I want to let you know that I'm a real alcoholic, but I'm not a pure alcoholic. And out of respect for this meeting, out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm definitely not going to get into a drug-a-log. But, I do need to say that I'm not a pure alcoholic, because when I tell you part of my story where I peeped out of a window for 3 days, you're going to be like, that's strange on scotch. You know, so it's not going to make any sense to you. When I tell you that I rolled myself up in a carpet because I thought the police were coming in at any time, and I thought this is the best hiding place anybody's ever found. That's not from Jim Beam, you know what I'm saying? It's gonna sound silly. So you need to fill in the blanks, and we'll still have respect. So I come from a good Italian family, and I had tried some other substances other than alcohol, marijuana and stuff. And it all worked. I want to tell you that every substance that I ever tried, except for reality, worked. Okay, it all worked. I am an equal opportunity exhibitionist for escape from reality. Okay, I am a happy camper with something in me. The only time that I ever said no to a drink or drug is when I didn't understand the question. And so I'm saying yes to a lot of different things. I go to college, and I'm in a fraternity, and I fall in love with a substance other than alcohol, although I really appreciate alcohol, and I was drinking alcohol, and alcohol is definitely my first love, Manischewitz. But when I got to college, being in the 80s, and being from New York, and because you were producing it, in Miami, Gonzo specifically, and some of his friends, and shipping it up through Pablo and some of the sources here in this meeting, and we do appreciate the discount, I got involved in other things. But to get involved in those things, you need to have money, and I didn't have money. I was a waiter in one of the destination resorts that you see, like in Dirty Dancing. I was a waiter where we sang at the tables, and at the end they give you an envelope on Sunday, and I was a Dirty Dancing type of waiter. And you don't make a lot of, you know, $50, $100, but you don't make enough if you really have a love for something other than alcohol. And I did. I definitely wanted to spend a lot more time in dry goods other than alcohol, but I didn't have the money. And then my hero, my uncle, JJ, that was a internist, the chief internist at Holy Cross Hospital in Broward, a genius of a man, at 30 years old, he went to Italy, didn't speak Italian, learned how to speak Italian at the same time he's in medical school that they're teaching him in Italian, and he became a doctor. Brilliant, brilliant man. I mean, I struggle in English in the United States, you understand? So I was like, wow, with my uncle. And he drove a Jaguar when nobody drove Jaguars, you know, 40 years ago, 30 years ago. Nobody drove Jaguars. He had a convertible Jaguar. And he was just the coolest guy. And he was single, and he lived on the Intercoastal in Broward. And I just worshiped everything he said. I ate up, and I just loved him. And then one day I got the call that he died at the bottom of a swimming pool alone. After going to Ruth Chris Steakhouse and drinking two bottles of Dom Perignon by himself with some waiters, went back to the house, dove in his swimming pool, died alone at the bottom of a swimming pool. Multi-millionaire. My uncle. Turns out he had alcoholism. My family didn't know about alcoholism. My family's a big, big deal in denial. Someone dies, you don't speak about it. Someone's weird, you don't talk about it. Someone's drinking, you know, they're geniuses. Someone goes away for a while, you don't speak about it. So we never really could take a look at my uncle's alcoholism because he was very successful, but then he died. And I'm in my senior year of college, and then and I'm the only male heir in my family. So I inherit a bunch of money. I'm going to talk about millions, but definitely a lot of money for a college kid. And I was already interested in some extracurricular things. Now I got the money to do it. But I don't know where to get it. I mean, I know where to get it, like small amounts, but I don't know where to get it. So I go back home, always on Sundays, go into Long Island. We're having dinner. And my grandfather, JC, he picks up the paper. We always had the paper at the table. He says, Stevie, look at this stuff. You try this one time and you're addicted. Never try this substance. There's a movie about it. It's called New Jack City. Promise me you'll stay away from it. I go, absolutely, Grandpa. Let me see that paper so I can see what I'm not going to be doing. I took that paper to Washington Heights in New York City, and I was like, anybody seen this? You know where I could get some of this stuff right here. I got so involved in that world as a college kid from Long Island, New York, not supposed to be there. I was not supposed to be there. But I only wanted one way out of me, and I didn't care what it was, and that seemed to be the quickest way out of me. You have a substance that you become instantly addicted to? That is the substance I want to try. Because anything other than that seems like it would be a on the road to that. I might as well go straight to that. And I did, and it offered a bottomless pit. And now instead of escaping, now I became an addict. And I can't stop. And I go home and I tell my family I can't stop. Not while I have money, of course. When I ran out of money, I realized I had a problem. I don't know about you, but whenever I have money, I'm good. And when I run out of money, I'm like, I have a real problem. This seems like a real problem here. It's possible I have a problem. And my family, we don't know anything about treatment. We don't know anything about AA. We don't know anything about recovery. This is a shock to my family. My poor mother, 3 months earlier, I was going to school in the Poconos of Pennsylvania. And 3 months earlier, this is true. On the way home from the resort where I worked as a waiter, I hit a deer. A lot of deer in Pennsylvania. And I called my mother. I said, listen, I just hit a deer. I need you to send money. The entire car is wiped out. They sent the money. Next week, I call my mother. Listen, Mom, I got to tell you something. I hit another deer. I hit 12 deers in those 3 months. By the time I came home and told my mother that I was an addict, she was relieved. She's like, we just thought you were a moron. You know what I'm saying? We're so happy you're an addict. Like, we can handle that. Stupidity, where are we going to send you? So they call a family member who had sent another family member out to Minnesota. And they suggested I watch 28 Days on video. And was it 28 Days? No, I'm sorry. It wasn't 28 Days. I apologize. It was called Clean and Sober, Michael Keaton. Yeah. Yeah. So I stayed in. I wasn't allowed out. We didn't know that alcohol was not allowed during that time. I was drinking the whole time in the house. I wasn't drinking alcoholically because I wasn't an alcoholic. But I was drinking while I was watching Clean and Sober, the movie. It seemed like they went together just fine. My parents were like, this is where you're going. You go to a place called treatment. I go, this looks fine. And I'm in the senior year of college, so I figured I'll go to treatment. It's not like now where everybody goes to treatment. Like, you know, like now you have like four options. You have, you know, college, military, trade school, or treatment. It wasn't like that 30 years ago. So we didn't know anybody that went there. So my whole reference point was Clean and Sober movie. But it looked, you know, it looked nice to people. There's a relationship in there. You know, there's a dance. There's milkshakes. I mean, I was into it all. And I had never been away except to Florida. And so I'm from New York. I worked in Pennsylvania in the Poconos, and I go to vacations in Florida. I don't have a broad spectrum of the United States at this point. So I pack the same way I would pack for spring break. You know, I get five different color guinea tees, which is the way I dress. Gold chains. I have my balloon pants, my muscle balloon pants, which are paper thin. They're almost like pajamas, but you can wear them outside. And I dress for my 28-day stay on the Clean and Sober movie situation. But it turns out it's in Minnesota, and it's February. I mean, I brought a jacket. I had that members-only jacket, the windbreaker. So you obviously know where Minnesota is. I didn't. I arrived there like I'm ready for spring break. I arrived there at the Minnesota airport. I'm like, yo, the kid is here. You know, I'm here. And then I experienced something that I will never forget till this day, and that's 26 years ago. I experienced a cold that you can only experience if you've seen the movie Fargo. It's that cold. Okay, it's not Pennsylvania cold. It's not New York cold. It's punch you in the face cold. And if you're ill-dressed or ill-prepared, It's a lasting memory. And so they whisk me off into the car. I'm shivering. They get me to the treatment center. I'm shivering. They get me inside the treatment center. I'm shivering. And there they are. The 12 steps. I never seen them. Never seen them. In the movie, they might have mentioned them, but I didn't see them. The guy went in 28 days. In clean and sober in the movie. He went for cocaine. So I figured people go for cocaine. And I get to this treatment center for young people. It's 21-year-old and under. And I see the word that I never saw before in the movie. And it says, we were powerless over alcohol. And I say, excuse me. And I had been familiar with hotels because my dad was a big hotel guy. Okay? It's hard to explain why he's a big hotel guy, but he was involved in like gambling type of organizations in Atlantic City that have no name, like that type of situation. So I was used to going to hotels, and I was used to seeing the concierge, and I was used to seeing the front desk captain because of my dad's last name. And God bless you. And I called the concierge over, and I said to him, excuse me, this is obviously a mistake. I have a $25,000 check in my pocket from Stan Boyarsky. And I say it slow, like, make sure they understood where I came from. They obviously didn't know my dad in Minnesota. And he said, so what's the problem? I go, I didn't come here for no alcohol. I came here from no other stuff. And he said, well, take it easy. One day at a time. We're going to love you until you could love yourself. I don't even know what that means. Love me. I already love me. Look at this. I'm only here to get off one substance. I'm going back to college. I'm in my senior year. I'm not even interested in a no alcohol phase of the program. And he said, well, you could leave. And I'm from New York, so I said, I'm going to leave. And I pick up my 3-piece matching Gucci luggage and I go to leave. But during that time, there was a snowdrift that went in front of the door, and nobody was leaving. It was like The Shining. And he knew that. And I tell you that story because it doesn't matter why you're here, Andy. It doesn't matter why you're here. He's not even Andy. It doesn't matter why you're here. It doesn't matter if your wife ordered, dad ordered, court ordered, police ordered, friend ordered. You're already here. You never have to pick up another drink again for the rest of your life, one day at a time, even if you want to. I came to AA through the cold and stayed. And was waiting to make a break for when it thawed out. But in the meantime, a miracle happened and you did love me until I was able to a little bit love myself. And a lot of the slogans, when they brought me to the oldest clubhouse in Minneapolis, 2218, a lot of the slogans, they didn't make any sense to a 21-year-old kid with the average age of the meetings back then in the meeting house that I was going to are 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, you know, like I am now. But back then I was like, oh my God, that guy's 50. What do you know? You're getting ready to die. What do you know? But you know, you get those women in AA, the most beautiful women in AA, and they just look at you and they go, oh, honey. Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the most amazing, magical places on planet Earth. You know, it's amazing. I met the gentleman that has the most time in the room, and I didn't know he had the most time in the room, but there's something about when I was going by him, I just knew I needed to meet him. And I went over and introduced myself to him. I just sensed that he had something I wanted. And I went over to tell him who I was. Because if it isn't for the people that come before us, we're not having this group tonight. The Homestead group is only as strong as it was because 70 years ago, some people with a coffee pot and a vision started this group. And we are responsible. Some of the new generation just think, wow, AA just pops up. It just is amazing. I went to a dinner. I don't know how it became. It just was there. I went there. The food was amazing. There was a speaker, and it's just incredible. No, it takes a lot of work to put this on. Months and months and months of planning, sometimes years in advance. And I started to a little bit appreciate Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't work the steps. And I didn't know God. And I'm 21. And I'm looking for girls. And you find them. You find them. And the girls find the boys, and that's how it is. And if you're looking for all the wrong reasons, you're going to be able to find all the wrong reasons. And I did, and then I lasted 18 months not working any of the program, and then I was out. And then I knew a new demoralization that I didn't know as a kid from college. Because my parents had joined Naranon, which is Al-Anon for narcotics kids. And they joined this program called Naranon, which teaches them this thing called tough love. I'm the only son in my family. We didn't know tough love. I didn't even know how to shop, make a bed, cook an egg. I knew nothing. I was completely spoiled. When I called my family in the middle of negative 27 degree below zero on Christmas, I said, listen, you need to get me home. I'm dying on the streets over here. I am freezing. I please. They said, we need to love you from afar. What? You need to love me from afar. You need to get me a plane ticket. We're going to help you help yourself. I knew I was in big trouble. They had learned some type of other language that I didn't understand. I'm like, break it down for me. What does that mean in terms of the amount of hours that I'm going to spend on the street here? They're like, you need to seek help over there. The only place I knew was a Native American detox that would take people from the tribe. So I quickly became a member of the tribe. I didn't speak much when I went there. I told them I was Native American. They invited me in. My mother's white. My dad's Native American. That's why you don't see it. And for 5 days, I said very little words. And I sought the help that I needed. And the state of Minneapolis invited me into their state system. Remember, I'm a privileged kid. I'm not a rich kid, but I'm a privileged kid from Long Island, New York, that goes out with a $35,000 or $25,000 check in my pocket. 2 years later, I'm in the state system of Minnesota with no help from my family. And what do you have if you have no help of your family? You got to reach out to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you got to start one day at a time clawing your way through. And if you relapse, you're screwed. I mean, when I left there, they knew I was not Native American. So that bridge is burned. That's burned. So I knew I needed to like make some quick moves fast. And I got back into the program and I got a year of sobriety and I got this incredible sponsor out there by the name of Jerry Bear. And he's a member of the Central Pacific Group of Minneapolis. Great group. Based on the Pacific Group of California, Clancy I, and I got in with some great people, some great step people, and I'm 24 years old, and I'm on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I come down here to Broward, and I land in Broward, and I call the intergroup office, and the intergroup office tells me that there's a meeting on Thursday night at the 12-step house. I go directly there, like a good AA does. I'm a year sober. I find my sponsor in the first night, Myron, a locksmith of Broward County. May God rest his soul. He just passed away with about 40 years of sobriety. Just a great man. I meet my best friend, Danny, who, may God rest his soul, died sober with 14 years. And I meet my home group, the 11-step group, with some real great old timers, Ruth Rogers and Maury, people with 30, 40, 50, 60 years. It was great. And I thought, how intelligent you guys are. You guys are so amazing. And you taught me how to live. You taught me a new way of life. And then I didn't have a relationship with God. I thought you told me that I could have a relationship with a God. I thought you said to me, I thought you said to me that I could have a relationship with a God of my understanding. That's what I thought you said. I made a misunderstanding. And then my sponsor, who wasn't Myron, because Myron was just too good. So I needed to get a lower type of sponsor that understand me better, because Myron was like at the high level. So I got, water seeks its own level. So I got a guy that can understand a guy like me, like a mover and shaker. Myron was not a mover and a shaker. He was a slow and steady, wins the race guy. But I'm kind of like very intelligent. Myron was very intelligent to me in the beginning, but then he started to become very slow as I got a little smarter. And I picked a guy that said, listen, what do you want God to be? God could be anything. I said, well, I want God to be loving. He goes, yeah, God's loving. I said, I want him to be all forgiving. He says, yeah, God's all forgiving. I said, I want him to be my best friend. He goes, he's all that. I didn't realize that there was more attributes to God. I only picked the top three that I liked. So I would bring him to strip clubs with me. He's my buddy. He's my friend. I would bring him to poker games with me. I would smoke cigars with him. We'd talk great in AA, and we'd talk totally inappropriate in parking lots about women. My God understood that. He's a guy's guy. I didn't understand that there's God, and he has a first name, and it's God. I didn't understand that the first 164 pages is pointing me to the creator of the universe, not some guy that I made up that can hang out with me at strip clubs. When I decided to start taking steroids, I said, God, what do you think about that? He's like, yeah, why not? Build up the body. I go, thank you, God. So I got the whole outside going on. I got 22-inch biceps. I got a Mustang Cobra. And the God-sized hole that's inside here is so deep. And I'm so miserable. And I'm 4 years sober. And I'm 26 years old. And I want to kill myself. And I don't know why. I look good. I got money. I got two businesses. I said to myself, it must be because I don't have them. I'm not married. If I was married. And then I saw her. I worked in the Fort Lauderdale Swap Shop. And in the Fort Lauderdale Swap Shop, they had a circus there. A famous circus. It was real. It was a real deal. And there was a visiting performer from Colombia. And I saw her trotting in on the elephant. And I watched her on the trapeze and I said, if I could get that girl, that's going to fix this. Because I'm restless. I'm irritable. I'm discontent. I'm now on steroids. So now I'm like aggressive. I'm like a big bull with an attitude from New York, in AA, past the effing mic, you know, like that. And I see Sandra. And she's got feathers and a showgirl and she's dancing. And I go, that's the one. That's the one. I get her, that fixes this. I get her, I put all the junk away. No more strip clubs, no more steroids, nothing. If I get her, it's going to fix me. And I got her. God bless you. I mean, it took some time. I pursued her. Back then, the stalking laws were not as serious as they are today. And she finally said yes. You know what I mean, Pablo. And she's not from this country, so she doesn't know that alcoholism has returned in me because she only knows me as sober, spiritual Steve. She doesn't see me as crazy, upset, irritable, discontent, alcoholic because I haven't had a drink in 5 years. And my parents give us a ticket to go anywhere in the United States. And because I'm a recovering alcoholic that's not in recovery anymore mentally, I picked New Orleans. Exactly. You all understand that. I didn't understand that. And my wife's like, why New Orleans, sweetie? And I go, because New Orleans is the home to jazz. And she goes, I like jazz. And so we go to New Orleans. And we're sitting in Emeril Lagasse's new restaurant, Nola. Brand new. And I'm reeking of alcoholism, even though I haven't had a drink for 5 years. And she's looking at me, and I'm looking at her, and I'm thinking about me. It's like the three of us. And I'm thinking, what a great catch she got at her wedding. And in the table next to us, is some disturbing behavior. We're in a fancy restaurant, so the table's right on top of us. And in the table next to us, they're drinking wine from a decanter, but they're not drinking it. The server comes over and pours wine in the middle of a decanter with like a breathing tube coming out of it, and I'm disturbed. And I say to the waiter, I said, what is going on in the table next to us? And he says that these people are drinking fine wine that needs to breathe first. What? I've never heard of such stuff. In my mind, I was thinking in mathematical equations. If I went straight from Mad Dog 2020 to crack, I miss fine wine. If I would have stopped at fine wine, I wouldn't need to be in AA. If I would have just stopped there, those people don't even drink it. I could do that. I could order fine wine that you don't drink. How bad could that be? And at that moment, I decided I was not powerless. I made a decision I was not powerless. We need to make a decision that we're powerless. If we don't feel we're powerless, we will drink again. If we don't feel we're powerless, we will drink again. It is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker that they'll be able to drink again. It's okay to have the thought, but you must believe you're powerless. And at that moment, I made a decision. I'm not powerless over fine wine. I never even had it. And for 2 years, I went to AA knowing I would drink again. And I picked up my 7-year medallion, and I knew that as long as I never went back to drugs, and I had a plan, it was foolproof. I told my wife, I said, sweetheart, I'm going to start drinking, but I'll never go to drugs. Mom and Dad, I'm going to start drinking, but I'll never go to drugs. Grandpa, JC, I'm going to drink, but I'm never going to go to drugs. And I really fully, truthfully believe this. I picked up my 7-year medallion, and I thanked my home group, the 11-step group, and I went to go try to find some fine wine at 7 o'clock at night on a Thursday night in Hollywood. But you got to know where to look for fine wine. And all I knew was August Moon Chinese food restaurant on Federal. And I ordered some rice wine in a box. And it was as fine as it ever got for me. And I drank that wine, and within 5 minutes, I had done a Xanax. I had 7 years. I had a foolproof plan. Never tried drugs again. The moment that drink went into my stomach, I said, you know, I think you have pills upstairs that was prescribed to you one time, and on the sticker it says, don't try with alcohol. What a great combination that would be. And within 5 minutes, I drank and drugged. During that year and a half, I became a bum. I became everything that I never, all my yets happened in that year and a half. 7 years in AA, and in a year and a half, every yet that I ever thought except for death happened. 6 felonies. Divorce papers from my new wife being drawn up with my parents against me. Imagine your wife goes with your parents for divorce papers. That is bizarre. She served me with a restraining order. She left the country. I tried drugs during those year and a half that I never tried when I was 21. I relapsed in drugs that kids do, and I'm 34 years old. I'm in a club going like this. I don't know how I got there. I don't know. I bounced for 3 days straight up and down like this. 18 years later, that's why my eyes are going in different directions. My last stay was in the Fort Lauderdale Hospital in the psychiatric floor. Jeff Weinstein comes in and says, I would like to invite you to come live in my halfway house. I said, Jeff, no disrespect, I own a full house right down the street from here. Hollywood, I own a full house. He says to me, this is a restraining order from your wife. You're not going home. Tomorrow you're homeless. I said, please tell me about your program. And I got into that halfway house, and it was January, the first week in January, 2002. And I was hopeless. I was suicidal. I was abandoned. My wife said, do not talk to me. I will pay your rent every week. Do not speak to me. When I come to pay your rent, don't look at me. My parents went on a cruise. They left the country. They said, listen, we're going on a cruise. You can't get in touch with us. Goodbye. When you get a year's, then we'll be back from the cruise. I'm like, Mickey, that's a long cruise. And here I am in the halfway house, and I call up my first sponsor, Jerry Bear. And Jerry Bear says, listen, Stevie, I'll sponsor you, but you're going to start praying on your knees. And I hadn't prayed in a while because I was in a relapse. And you don't really, prayer is not a big deal when you're in a relapse. I mean, I prayed that, you know, the stuff would be real, and I'd pray I wouldn't get arrested and pray that they'd let me out quicker when I did get arrested, you know. But I didn't pray on my knees. My sponsor said, you're going to start praying on your knees in the morning, and you're going to ask God to keep you clean and sober. And at nighttime, you're going to get on those same knees, and you're going to thank God for another day clean and sober. Because if I invited you over my house, and you sat at my table, and you grabbed the food, and you didn't say please, and then you left the house, and you didn't say thank you, I would never invite you back again. And I said, I understand that. He said, so why would you be in God's world one day without saying please for the gift of sobriety, and thank you for the gift of sobriety at the end of the day? He said to me, the disease of alcoholism is not a flat-footed cop that walks around the streets of New York with a donut in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. The disease of alcoholism is like a Secret Service agent that walks in and out of parties unnoticed, that speaks five languages, that knows how to use every weapon in the arsenal. And if you have any respect for your sobriety, you better have that much more respect for the disease of alcoholism. And I was like, wow. And for 30 days, I prayed on my knees, and I prayed at night, and I was in the deal. And I was in it, and I was showering, whoa. Brushing my teeth, shaving. I even flossed. And in 30 days, I started to think maybe I overreacted. Maybe I have one more in me. I'm in the halfway house. I'm one of the best looking guys in there. Nobody else had teeth. I'm thinking, maybe I overreacted. I'm going to go out for one more day. I'm not going to tell anybody because I had developed some superpower, some junkie superpower with 30 days of sobriety, and I was going to be able to stop using in a couple hours, brush my teeth, take a shower, and nobody in the halfway house would know. And I had this great plan. But I was already programmed by Jerry to get on my knees in the morning. So I was on my knees asking God to keep me clean and sober, and then at a 45-degree angle of my knees, I made a plan to get high. Every single day, even up to today, and I'm sure that our friend that has 46 years of sobriety will tell you the same thing. Every single day, that's the reason we go to meetings, that's the reason we talk to God, that's the reason we read spiritual books, and for me, the reason I go to church. Every single day, there's good Steve in there, and there's bad Steve. Who I feed wins, who I starve dies. And I got up from my knees, and I made a decision to go get loaded. And I called, but I'm not a guy that's going to go get loaded with no money. Okay, I'm not when I'm sober 30 days. So I call up my wife and I say, sweetie pie. And right there she knows. You know, what? She says, what? I said, honey, could I have $199 for a cell phone? Because my sponsor's in California. And she says, hold on. And so I think she's checking the bank account. Once again, my family, behind my back, she joined Al-Anon. And she calls up her Al-Anon sponsor, and her Al-Anon sponsor says, give the bum the money. Let's find out right now if the divorce papers are going to get put through. And they set me up. They give me $199 on the money card. I don't know if that's a principle of Al-Anon, but I don't agree with it. And I rush over to the Sprint store with the money card, and I say to the guy behind the counter, I need to have the cheapest cell phone you have. Because I knew I had to call my wife with that cell phone, and I need to call the halfway house owner with the cell phone so that I could, you know, pretend where I wasn't. And this is what God does. You see, what's so amazing about God is He doesn't need your permission to enter your life. God puts a guy behind the counter at the cell phone place from Alcoholics Anonymous from the day before, and he says, Stevie B, it's so good to see you. I'm from Victory. I saw you pick up your under 30 days. And step two. I didn't know it was step two back then, but I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, because right there I wanted to get loaded and God interceded. And for the next 9 months, all sorts of miraculous things happened. My grandmother died, I didn't use. I got into a car accident with amazing men in my car, and I was 100% wrong. And I was with a guy with 30 years, a guy with 40 years, and I was 100% wrong, and I could have hurt them all. And that man took me out of the car, and instead of yelling at me, which everybody in my life always yelled at me, he said, let's get down on our knees and pray at the Pacific Coast Highway in California. He said, let's pray and thank God that we didn't get killed. When I was 100% wrong. I started to see God work in my life, even though I really didn't understand who He was. I started to see some amazing God stories. And I'm praying on my knees in the morning, I'm praying on my knees at night, and my wife invites me to come back and live in the big bed. The big bed. In our house. I'm leaving the halfway house, I'm leaving Sticky Feet Mason and Big Eddie, and I'm leaving. And I return back to our house. And my wife is downstairs and she's cooking breakfast, and there's a smell of eggs and there's a smell of coffee, and she's Colombian and there's a smell of arepas. And I'm just like, so thank you, Lord. And I get on my knees and I just say, thank you, God. Thank you for this new way of life. And I come up with this idea, because the devil, the enemy, will always be waiting for you to mess up. He's cunning, he's powerful, he's patient. He wants to see you fail. He wants your family torn apart. He wants to see you be not a success story. He wants to see you be a bad story. And he gives me this idea to turn my mattress over, because I hadn't been there in a year. And I turn the mattress over, and there's my stash that I had left there in a blackout. But I had just gotten up off my knees. The first time in my life, it was me and God and the stuff. And not just me. And we find out in the program, there'll come a time when it's just between you and God, and you'll know if you're really in. And I start crying, and I call my wife, and she's crying, and we get all this stuff. It was very, very harsh on both of us to see that kind of stuff in the house. And we bag it up, and we get it over to the garbage in Publix, and we're holding hands, and we're kissing each other, and we can't believe I'm in. I can't believe I'm in, and life is incredible. And I start sponsoring men, and I'm going around the country speaking, and it's just great. Just great. Life is just amazing. I come up with an idea that I want to start speaking in treatment centers. I want to start meetings. So I start speaking in treatment centers. I start meetings. I start meetings with different names. And it's just is great. And as natural, being a 38, 40-year-old person without a child, we want to have a baby. So we make a decision to have a baby. It seems to me that you just go and have a baby. But for us, it didn't work like that. So we go to have a baby and we can't have a baby. And then we go to a clinic and we go through the procedures and we can't have, I mean, it doesn't work. And then our favorite niece from Colombia donates her eggs to us. And that doesn't work. We hire a surrogate. And that doesn't work. We finally get pregnant and we're walking on air. We build the baby room in the house, and of course it doesn't have a sex because we're waiting for the decision date on what it is, and just the greatest time in our lives, and we're like skipping on air, and now we're in our 40s, and the baby room is built, and we're gonna have an AA baby, and we go to the doctor, and we put the CD in, and the nurse says, I'll be right back, and the doctor comes in and says, I'm sorry, and I say, no, that's not possible. You need to check it again. You need to check that again. Because by now I'm like a serious God guy. I'm in church, I'm in ministry, I'm in meetings, I'm sponsoring so many guys. I'm going to meetings all around the country. I do it all for free and for fun for God. And I just know that it's not possible. It's not possible for that to be. Please check it again. And my wife starts crying and I start crying. And some well-meaning people in AA tell me that God only gives us what we can handle, which is not true. It's not that God gives someone a baby dying and another person a wife dying and another person a bankruptcy. God doesn't do that. Life happens. And sometimes it's really brutal. The truth of the matter is that God will give you the strength to get through it. And another person in AA said, pray for the willingness to accept God's will. Pray that this is God's will, even though He didn't cause it, and pray that He'll get you through it. And that helped. Telling me that God wants me to have a dead baby did not help. But other people in AA, they came around us. They loved on us. But we still don't have a baby. And we go to an adoption agency. And we get kicked out of an adoption agency. Turns out I was such an amazing guy in Alcoholics Anonymous in my first sobriety, strip clubs, and gambling, and it turns out one of the things I did was I picked up a prostitute that happened to be a police officer, which I don't know if you know, that's not a good combination. And my wife didn't know. So we get asked to leave the adoption agency because her fiancé, 12 years earlier, whatever the time frame is, 12 years earlier, picked up a prostitute coming out of the Fort Lauderdale men's group, that which was a police officer, and now we can't adopt. And now we just don't understand which way to turn, and we're going to God, and we're saying, God, please, you say you're going to give us the desires of our heart, but we can't have a baby. We have a baby room built. There's just something's not adding up. And I want you to know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's many experts in AA. But no, I'm saying it in a real way. I'm not afraid. I mean, there's bank experts in here. There's finance experts in here. There's lawyers in here. There's doctors in here. There's all types of people with experience. And I remembered in my home group, Happy Bob from the West Side Men's Group. He was a very powerful attorney before he was caught with 3 kilos. And I called up Happy Bob and I said, Happy Bob, we don't know how to have a home study because we got kicked out of the adoption agency. And Happy Bob says, you know what, why don't you call up this lady Mary Ann that I used to work with? And Mary Ann tells me about this woman by the name of Mindy from Boca. And we call up Mindy from Boca, and Mindy from Boca is going to do the home study. But by now, my wife and I, we're like over-the-top Christians. We're not like regular Christians where you wouldn't know. We got bumper stickers. We got signs. We got posters. We have T-shirts. We have statues. We got St. Francis from every saint all the way down. And we have, you got to do communion on the way into my house. So I say to my wife, sweetheart, should we take giant Jesus down from the wall? Because when Mindy from Boca comes in the house, she's not going to be happy that we're like over the top. Let's be under the cover for Mindy. And Mindy from Boca comes in the house. And she looks at all the stuff and she reads my testimony. And she says, do you think God gave you another chance after all this? I said, I know he did. I'm 11 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, so how could I not give you another chance? And Mindy from Boca signs off on the home study. But if you understand that that's a great miracle, what I talked about. But now you got to get in line from around the country to get in line to be picked out of a million and one chance lottery that someone's going to want you to be the parent of their baby. And just a short time later, from the top of the United States by California, right by Canada, a mom calls us and she says she wants us. My wife, who's Colombian and dark-skinned, me, an Italian from New York, wants us to go up and visit this white, white girl up in the top of the United States, in the mountains of Montana, and she wants to give us her baby. How does that work out? That's God. And we show up there at the hospital in the middle of nowhere where there's a horse in the middle of the turnstiles in the airport. We're like, we're not in Fort Lauderdale anymore. And she's the darkest person in the entire airport. And we arrive at the hospital, and this beautiful mom is holding up our son from day that was born earlier that day. And she's holding up this translucent white baby. And she says, what would you like to name Casper? And we say, we would like to name the baby Joshua. And she says, why Joshua? And we say, because in the Bible it says, for me and my house, we choose to serve the Lord. And she says, I'm not a religious person. I said, listen, I get that. I just want you to know that Joshua is going to grow up in a sober, godly home. And 2.5 weeks later, we bring Joshua home on a plane. Members of Alcoholics Anonymous are standing on my lawn with a sign and welcome home, and the baby's weight, Joshua's weight, and other people from AA had been taking care of our house because it was about 3 weeks. They've been taking care of our house and taking care of our dogs, and Alcoholics Anonymous was there on our lawn. And Alcoholics Anonymous, because we were in our 40s, taught us how to raise a baby. Alcoholics Anonymous taught us in meetings that we would bring our son into meetings and how to take care of him in the meetings and how to do the changing and how to do all the walking, how to do all these feeding, how to do everything. Alcoholics Anonymous gave us baby showers because her family lives in Colombia and my family's in New York. Alcoholics Anonymous loved us and showed us. And I want to show you how God shows off. I want to show you how he puts the cherry on the sundae. Because he's doing that in all of our lives right now. He wants to wow us. And how he wowed me, of course we have the baby, I'm walking around cloud nine, 45 years old, I got a newborn, it's incredible, I'm in AA, taking my baby around everywhere, I got him in that little satchel that people wear, he goes everywhere, I'm jogging with him, everything. He's 8 months old, and he springs out the most glorious red hair. He was bald up until that moment. I come home. He springs out the most beautiful green eyes. And he looks exactly like my mom. And he looks exactly like his cousins. When they take pictures, the four of them together, which they're coming in this Friday from New York, and he takes pictures with his cousins, it's the four of them that came from God's litter. It's so amazing how he shows off in our lives. And you're going to hear people saying that they want to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And yes, staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous is the byproduct of a relationship with God. And yes, it's wonderful to stay sober and you have to stay sober, but that's not the goal. If the goal is sober, it's like going to the buffet and going up to the buffet and you have your plate and you have your fork and you have your knife and you go up to the buffet and you stop at the salad bar and you pick up a crouton and you go back to eat. And you're eating with your crouton and your fork and your knife and people say, how are you doing? And you go, hanging in there. But the people that have God in their heart, they're going through the whole buffet because they know that God wants to wow them and show them the next thing in their lives and show them the next sponsee and show them the next event. And they're going through the whole buffet and they're eating the prime rib and they're eating the crack crab and they're eating the lobster and they got juice on their face and they're happy and they're joyous and they're free. And before I close, I want to just read what Dr. Bob said. And I want to tell you, this has been a great night. This has been so fun. I want to read with you what Dr. Bob said about the 12th step. Dr. Bob, our founder of the program, one of our founders, said, I spent a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. And I do it for four reasons. One is sense of duty. Two, it's a pleasure. I'm sure this was a pleasure for you guys to put on. The food was magnificent. The night was magnificent. Somebody's going to win a ridiculous amount of money tonight. I don't know what you do for a living, but I'd love to hire you. You're amazing. Because it's a pleasure. Because in doing so, I'm paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And fourthly, because every time I do it, I take a little more insurance for myself against the possible slip. Dr. Bob said this in his story. He said, stay. Miracles are going to happen. And your heavenly Father will never let you down. And I'm going to say, God bless you and thank you for having me speak.